Creating Change with Doug Foresta, a show dedicated to creativity and emotional healing. Creating Change on Empower Radio.
EmpowerRadio.com.
Here's your host, Doug Foresta.
Hello, everyone. Thanks so much for joining me today. This is Doug Foresta. Welcome back to Creating Change. And as we approach Thanksgiving, I am very thankful to have with me today Constance Scharf back by popular demand. We're going to be talking about some more about the book Ending Addiction for Good, the groundbreaking holistic evidence-based way to transform your life. And we're going to be talking a little bit more about sort of separating out fact from fiction with addiction, because I believe that there are a lot of misconceptions that people have about addictions. And I'm so glad that Constance, as well as Richard Tate, who co-wrote the book, are out there doing the work that they're doing. I'll just say a little bit about Constance and then bring her right on. Dr. Constance Scharf has a PhD in transformative studies, specializing in addiction recovery. She's the addiction researcher and transformative study scholar at Cliffside Malibu Treatment Center, a researcher with the Institute for Creative Transformation, and the world's leading expert on using ecstatic spiritual experience to maintain long-term sobriety. She's the co-author of the book Ending Addiction for Good with Richard Tate. And she writes for a variety of journals and speaks to healing professionals and helping addicts in recovery maintain their sobriety. And I definitely encourage you to visit www.endingaddictionforgood.com to check out more about the book and the authors. Dr. Constance Scharf, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks. It's great to have you back. And I thought, like I said, we were talking a little bit before the show. And what I wanted to talk about today is this idea of separating out fiction from fact and when it comes to addictions. And one of the things I thought we could start with is everyone knows that addiction is a disease, correct? And I'm leading
well,
you
here. Well, sure. That's the model that most people are most familiar with and understand.
And in the book, what do you and Richard say about that?
Well, we reject the disease model. We certainly understand its verbiage, and we will use it with clients who come to the treatment center because it's the jargon that they're used to. But what the disease model tells a person is that there's something wrong with them. They have this affliction that they will never get over, and that if they don't manage it in a particular way, that they'll eventually die or end up in an institution, and that they should expect relapse and for it to be the challenge of recovery to be very hard. And that's probably the most disempowering position you can put an addict in, is to say pretty much you're hopeless, but we'll try anyway. And that's what the disease model does. So we reject that, and we say that addiction is a behavioral problem, and the scientific and the psychological research really bears this idea out, that this is just a habituated behavior that an addict has gotten into to deal with pain, and that if we can help the addict learn how to better cope with pain in different ways, psychological, spiritual, physical, all different types of pain and trauma from their past, and work through those past issues, then they no longer need to self-medicate, and the problem of addiction begins to fall away. And then we couple that with lifestyle change so that a person, when they leave treatment, really has a very different sort of life to return to.
Yeah, it's because really, I mean, I was thinking about as you were saying that, you know, the people a lot of times really focus on the physiological dependence, let's say, of alcohol. But the truth is, I mean, you can detox, one can detox in it really shortly, and that will be over, and then put them back in. And then the problem still remains, because the problem, like you said, is the behavioral issue and the lifestyle issue. And even like you said, the underlying maybe trauma issues or other issues that are going on. And that's really the hardest part. I would imagine that's the hardest part in a way to deal with.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, anyone who has heard of or known someone who's been to rehab 6, 7, 12, 15 times knows that separating someone from the substance they abuse, the detox process, is not recovery. That is not treatment. That is the prerequisite to having a clear enough mind and a healthy enough body and spirit to be able to do the real work of recovery. And so that's what happens after detox in the treatment process. And what we do is at Cliffside Malibu is try to give someone a really safe and secure, loving, supportive environment so that they can look at those underlying causes of grief and trauma and pain, whatever they are, and work through them. Because that's what drives the habituated process of using drugs or alcohol. They don't do it because addicts don't do it because they want to get high necessarily. They do it because they've had so much pain, and coming away from the drug is so painful, withdrawal is so painful, that they really don't have a choice. They have to engage in the behavior. And that's what we help them to change. That's what real treatment and recovery is.
And I also want to bring up that just even in the subtitle of the book, you know, Ending Addiction for Good, the groundbreaking holistic evidence-based way to transform your life. I just also want to make it clear to listeners that, you know, I talked about how you're sort of the resident scholar for Cliffside Malibu, but I want to make sure also that people understand that as far as I know, there is no other rehab center that actually has a researcher on staff. Is that correct?
That's my understanding as well. At this point, we don't know of any other treatment center in the world that that has a scholar or a researcher on staff. And my role with the recovery center, I'm not a clinician. I do not see clients. My role is to look at the research as it becomes available in the scientific literature, the medical literature, the psychological literature, and to see what new treatments are out there that are showing promise when applied to addiction recovery, so that our clients always have the best new technologies and the best treatments available, because this is like any other process. Addiction recovery treatment is a growing field, and it's open to change, and new things come along that we want to take advantage of to make addiction, recovering from addiction, easier and more long-term than it has been in the past.
And that actually ties into another big misconception, I think, or a fact from fiction, maybe I'll bring it to you, which is that, you know, that when treatment basically consists of that, when people think about sending a loved one to treatment, what that means is that they will be engaged in a really intense 12-step environment, and that is substance abuse or addiction treatment. I'm wondering if you can say something about that.
Sure. So 12-step was developed a little over 70 years ago in the Midwest, between a Midwestern doctor and a venture capitalist or banker, depending on your perception, from New York. And, you know, they had this idea that was based on a Christian philosophy to get together and to help each other stay sober. And the 12-step program of Alcoholics Anonymous and subsequently all 12-step programs came out of that idea. And, you know, 70-some-odd years ago, it was the only treatment that worked. And so people thought of it as treatment, because nothing that the hospitals did was really effective at all, nothing that the psychologist did. Carl Jung talks about being terribly frustrated with his alcoholic and drug-addicted patients. But that's not the case anymore. In the last 70 years, all sorts of different treatments and technologies have been developed that can help addicts on the levels of mind, body, and spirit. One of the things that we talk about that was developed in our book, Ending Addiction for Good, that was developed in the 1990s is the stages of change psychological model, and that helps us to engage a person at their level of willingness to change. So you don't have to have an addict come to treatment anymore who really wants to change. We get a lot of people who don't even know they have a problem. But we now have the resources to engage them and help them move along so that they can overcome their addiction and recover. So 12-step is great for what it does, but if you go to a treatment center that only gives 12-step work, which some treatment centers do, then you've just bought a $30,000 big book, which is available. It's the main text of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's available for, I don't know, $4 or for free at any AA meeting that you go to in the world. You don't need that. You need these other resources that you can only get in a reputable treatment center.
And unfortunately, there are many, I don't know, many, I shouldn't say many, but there are definitely treatment centers where the big book or 12-step is the treatment. That basically is the treatment.
Well, there are, and that is really because that's what, you know, 30 years ago when, or, you know, treatment centers really started to take off, that's what was available. That was the best thing that we had to offer. And now that's just no longer the case. If you combine intensive psychological one-on-one therapy every day with small group work, with acupuncture and exercise and a proper diet, you have a different sort of synergistic experience where the addict really has the strength and support they need to do the deep psychological work that uproots addiction. Because, you know, addiction treatment centers overall have a very poor success rate. 83% of the people who get out of treatment today will be using within a year. We have a much higher success rate than that at Cliffside Malibu, and that's because we employ these different technologies.
That brings me to another sort of fiction that I think about. So just to put that one out, what you just said is there, I believe that many people think that, you know, there's nothing you can do if a loved one has an addiction. You just have to wait till they hit bottom. And you're clearly saying that's not the truth. That's not true anymore.
No, that's not the truth at all. And we write about that extensively in the book, but also if you look at shows like Intervention, you know, the whole idea of an intervention is that you come to an addict before they hit bottom. If you wait for an addict to hit bottom, they very well may die first. You know,
right.
Especially when you have prescription medications that you can take literally a couple of pills, have a couple of beers, and die. You have to, if you understand, if you recognize that someone you love has an addiction or even you think is abusing substances and you're not sure if they're an addict, it's really important to intervene and to say, hey, you know, let's pull up your bottom is what is commonly used in the industry, you know, to raise that bottom so that someone doesn't have to die or lose everything or destroy their children's lives and their marriage and so forth. You don't have to do that anymore.
That's so wonderful. I mean, that's one of the reasons that I'm so grateful to have you on, because I feel like people need to really, that message needs to be heard, that people really need to really get that, because it, like you said, that can save lives.
You know, there's something else I'd love to say about intervention is,
sure.
You know, we hear a lot about tough love, that you have to be really strong and draw these lines in the sand. And if you don't do what I'm going to tell you to do, right, if you don't go to treatment in this way, then we're going to cut you off. You know, that scares an addict to death, you know,
right.
and they don't know what to do. Do I choose my loved one, who they really probably do love you, even if they're not behaving very well, or I can't give up my drug? They don't know what to do, and it causes a lot of problems. And one of the things that we really encourage is what we call loving people into treatment.
Mm.
That if you can give that message of, I care about you so much that I'm willing to risk my relationship with you, to tell you the things that you may not see. How can I help you to recover? Just that little change of frame encourages people into treatment, because then we can say, and right, in treatment, you're not going to be punished for being a bad person, for being an addict. We're going to help you look at why it is that you feel like you need to do this. What brought you to this place to begin with? And we're going to love and support you through that whole process. that kind of intervention really has some tremendous results for getting people to go to treatment, and more importantly, for getting them to stay, because getting an addict to stay in treatment is the most difficult part of the equation.
Which brings me to another piece, which is a really important piece of the book and also of Cliffside Malibu, about the idea of stages of change. And we were talking a little bit again before the show, and we're talking about the there's a saying in the big book in Alcoholics Anonymous about, you know, half measures avail us nothing, and that someone has to be sort of entirely ready and entirely willing. And I'm wondering if you could say a little bit sort of about the stages of change and how you use that. You know, how you use that at Cliffside Malibu and you know, and sort of how you address that in the book.
Sure. Well, the stages of change suggest that a change process, so the kind of life transformation you see from going from an addict to someone who is sober and recovered from addiction, happens in a process. And what we do is we recognize where a person is at in that process. And we have specific interventions that work, you know, different interventions that work with different types of people at each one of these stages, at each one of these levels. What a 12-step perspective is, unless you come in really at the middle level, where you're ready for a plan and you're ready for someone to tell you what to do, which most addicts are not at that level, which is why most addicts relapse using this, the 12-step model. Unless they come in at that level, there's really nothing that the 12-step program can do. What we specialize in is looking at and use the stages of change model to do this, is we recognize, right, addicts are usually at what we call the pre-contemplation stage of change. It means they don't even know they want to change. And that is characterized by the person who's either completely in denial about their problem or so demoralized by it, they don't believe there's help. And so what we do is we lift up that person's self-esteem as much as we can and open their eyes to the possibility of hope. Now, that doesn't mean that, you know, we don't hope for complete abstinence at the end of, you know, as the goal of recovery. But if someone really is only able to put in a certain amount of effort and goes from being, you know, a gutter drinker to, you know, having a couple of drinks two or three times a month, that's a major change, right, in their life and their lifestyle. And that, who are we to judge that that's not an improvement? Now, we hope that we can then get them to the next stage and the next stage so they can really live the happiest and fullest life possible. But it is not true to say that half measures avail you nothing. If you practice golf every day, you're going to become a better golfer. You may not become a professional golfer, but mm-hmm. you are going to show improvement. And so any encouragement that we can give to an addict, I think, is well used.
I appreciate that, and again, that's another reason why I'm so glad to have you on today to share that, because again, I think that these are, I really do think that everything we've been talking about are sort of, it's funny, I just think addiction is one of those fields where it's, there's a lot more that people feel they know than what we actually know, if that makes sense.
No, it's really true, and you know, we put out, you know, this disease model as if it's fact. And it's not. It's one way of looking at the problem. And the behavioral model, you know, it certainly has its merits, but what we found is, instead of presenting it as fact, we said this is the model that we use,
right,
because it empowers people to recover. Is it absolute truth with a capital T? I don't know. But it really seems to be effective in helping people recover, and that's what we care about.
Yeah, in fact, Cliffside Malibu, I think, is one of the only places that has also has a guarantee on there, right?
Yeah, I do not also do not know of another treatment center that has a guarantee. And what the guarantee is that if you complete treatment, and most addicts don't, we have about 45% who complete treatment. If you complete treatment and then relapse within your first year, Rich will bring you back to primary care for 30 days. To fix whatever the problem was that has, you know, created the issue that caused you to go back to using. And my understanding from Rich is that in the years that he has had that guarantee, he has only had to bring someone back once.
That's amazing.
It really is.
Yeah, especially when you think about, you know, how many people relapse, and usually in the model of what happens, that to have only one person come back is pretty amazing.
It is.
I wanted to also, I guess as we're wrapping up, the last piece I really wanted to talk about was something that I'm really passionate about, which is the idea that I think one of the things I love about Cliffside Malibu is the other piece about the holistic piece of it. And another sort of fiction that I feel like gets perpetuated a lot is an addict is an addict is an addict. I've seen one. I've seen them all. You know, I've seen treatment professionals who get into this where I already know you. I've seen 1,000 of you today. And one of the things I love about, I think, the work that you and Richard do is that maybe you could speak about sort of the person with the addiction, sort of that the idea of the difference between, you know, is that true? An addict is an addict is an addict.
Well, no, we certainly don't look at it that way, because we don't look, when someone comes to the treatment center, we don't look at them as an addict. They are Joe or Mary or Sam, right, or George. They are a person who suffers from the consequences of a habituated behavior, who basically has made some bad choices to cover up some pain that they just don't have the tools to deal with. I mean, that's really what someone's talking about when they talk about an addict. But we're seeing major changes across the field of addiction, really because of prescription medications and prescription mm-hmm. medication abuse. And we see people who don't understand how strong and how dangerous prescription medications are, for example, and don't realize that if they take a couple of prescription meds and maybe have a few beers, they might die. And so we're seeing a whole population, from very young people to very old people, a lot of people in middle age, who aren't your street-type addict, who really need the support of some level of treatment, whether it's detox, and additional support to understand how the substance abuse process is working in their lives, to full-blown addicts who don't recognize that they are addicts because they're only using legal things that they got from their doctor.
Right. Matter of fact, last week we had Dr. Raskin on, talking about the elderly, and that's another sort of people, elderly, you know, we think of drug addicts as people who are sneaking into alleyways, and that right now the truth is that it's prescribed medication that is the most abused.
It really is, after alcohol, and it's killing people. And I know there was President Clinton has had some deaths in his circle recently, and has gotten involved with the Global Clinton Initiative with this wow. issue, because it is so pervasive and so dangerous. And addiction isn't what most people think it is. It's really not that guy shooting up in an alley. That's part of what addiction can be, but it really has a much broader scope.
Well, the time has flown by, I have to say. I have to have you back again, because there's just so much to talk about.
Anytime.
Thank you. But I really want to, again, I want to make sure people know my guest is Dr. Constance Scharf, along with Richard Tate. She's the co-author of the book Ending Addiction for Good, The Groundbreaking Holistic Evidence-Based Way to Transform Your Life. It's available pretty much wherever books are sold. Is that fair to say?
Yes, and it's specifically available on Amazon.com.
Constance Scharf, thank you so much for joining me today, and I look forward to continuing the conversation in the future.
Thank you very much.
Take care. So thank you, everyone, again for listening. This is Creating Change. I do want to encourage all of you to check out the Facebook page. It's www.facebook.com, Creating Change with Doug. And we're going to continue the conversation there and have more information about everything that we've talked about. And if you'd like to reach me, feel free to, you can connect with me on that Facebook page as well. Until next time, remember, keep creating. The world needs your gifts. This is Doug Foresta. Take care, everyone.